This gentleman here, I want to thank him, man. He came all the way down from Boston, Massachusetts. And I heard him speak last summer. And I want to tell you, when you leave here, you will have a new thirst for the program. But you need to take some action to that thirst, because he will leave you with a thirst. And his name is Dave P. Thank you.
Don't worry about the clock. I bet this moves around with me, can I? Does it?
Yep.
Cool. Nope. I'm going to put this over here.
Give you one of them Madonna earphones.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Perry. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, what a beautiful morning. And thank you so much for thinking of me. Thank you so much for inviting me. I consider it an honor and a privilege. Anytime I'm asked to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be able to come out here to Easton, is that where I am? Easton, Pennsylvania, on the map is just a beautiful thing, and I'm humbled and I'm grateful. So thank you for having me. And I always want to mention my friends who drove out from Boston with me, Bruce and Katie. Poor Bruce is near heart attack level with my driving, and he's got one hand on the dashboard, one clutching the seat, and Katie's just back there reading her magazines, relaxing. It's two total opposites, and I love them both for coming and joining me and being here too. So thanks, you guys. So my sobriety date, November 15, 2001. Yep, 8.5 years ago, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 41 years old. I came back there. And I say I came back because I'd been here before. It wasn't my first time at this rodeo, let me tell you. I had been here before. For 12 years prior to November 15, 2001, I was coming in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, constantly relapsing. Couldn't figure out what you people were about more often than not. I'm coming to your meetings not wanting to be there more often than not. You know, I'm coming here, you know, because some force in my life has me coming here. You know, I'm here because the courts have me here. I'm here because my family has me here. I'm here because my job has me here. I'm here for a lot of different reasons, but I'm not here because I have me here. I'm not here because I want to be here. You know, in those times that I am here, I'm looking around, I'm wondering what you people are really quite all about. I'm coming on a nightly basis, and when I came, I was a meeting maker. During that 12-year period, from 12 years prior to November 15, 2001, chronically relapsing, but coming to your meetings, I'm a meeting maker, I'm coming on a nightly basis, and I'm watching this thing work for all you guys, and it ain't working for me. I'm hearing about your new freedom and your new happiness, and I ain't getting none of that. You know what I mean? You know, you're talking about these miracles in your life, and you're reading me these promises every day, you know, that just weren't happening. I'm watching you guys not drink on a daily basis, on purpose. and I can't understand that at all. It's like, whoa, you're kidding me, really? You know? I'm watching you guys enjoy happy, free sobriety, and I'm not experiencing any of that. You know, I can summarize, you know, well, a couple of things in common during every stretch of sobriety I had during those 12 years. A couple of things in common. Number one, every time I was here, I knew I wasn't staying. I'll be honest. It's hindsight and clarity that'll tell you that. I wouldn't have told you that then. I'm here to stay back then. Rah, rah, rah. Let's go one day at a time. You know? I would have told you that. But hindsight and clarity, there was always something inside me that says, I am not going to last. This is not going to take. This is not here to stick. You know, I'm not sticking and staying. Another thing that I had in common during that period of time is every time I was here, I didn't want to be here. I felt like I was sentenced to sobriety. You know, I did. Sobriety felt like a sentence. I was sentenced to your meetings. I was sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm looking around on a nightly basis saying, my God, please, tell me there's more to my life than this. If all I got to look forward to is hot coffee on cold metal chairs hiding out in your church basements the rest of my life, shoot me now. I ain't going to make it, you know. I knew that. You know, and the third thing I can tell you, every stretch of sobriety I had during that period of time, whether it was for a week, whether it was a month, whether it was a year, whether it was at 1.3 years, every stretch of sobriety was marked by the same commonality. I was miserable. I was suffering in sobriety. I wasn't a problem drinking. I was a problem sober. You know, I was miserable in sobriety. I was restless. I was irritable. I was discontented sober. You know, the world that would otherwise terrify me, I could walk smooth with a drink in my hand, was no longer in my hand, and I'm no longer walking smooth. I'm no longer comfortable out there. I have no clue how to interact with you people. I have no clue how to walk in this world comfortably. I have no clue how to live this life of mine, because I no longer have the one thing in my life that allowed me to live it comfortably, and that was alcohol. It was taken away. Every stretch of sobriety was marked that way. You know, but here I am today. Here I am this morning, this beautiful Saturday morning, sitting out here with you guys in Eastern Pennsylvania. And I didn't drive all the way out from Boston to lie to you this morning. You know what I mean? I'm here to report the truth. I have no stake in the matter. You know what I mean? I'm here to report the truth. And the truth of the matter, you guys, is this: for the last 8.5 years, I am here to report that I have been happily, joyfully sober. Happy and sober. Same sentence. Don't figure it out. Before it was one or the other. Either you're happy or you're sober. But I can't figure it can be in both. How do you put that together? What kind of combo's going on there? I wasn't getting any of that. You know? Here I stand, happy, joyfully, sober. 8.5 years into it. You know? Without that reservation in my mind, like somewhere, somehow along the way, somewhere real soon, I'm going back out there. That's not part of my life today. How is it? Why is it? What's the biggest difference? Every time I speak, I come down and I say it to the same thing. I get the same thing coming at you. The biggest difference for me between those 12 years where I was constantly relapsing on a regular basis compared to these last 8.5 years, one word. Sponsorship. Sponsorship. Sponsors. Someone came in front of me. God put a man in front of me. God put a man in front of me this time. God inspired, God driven, God directed, God conscious, God centered to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who came into my life, who told me the truth, who's not afraid to tell me the truth, who loved me enough to tell me the truth. He told me the truth from the start. He said, I don't care what you think. I don't care what you feel. Those aren't my concerns. Those aren't my cares. Those aren't my problems. That's not what I'm here for. If what I have to say offends you, Dave, well, that's sorry. Sorry, but it's not my problem. I'm not worried about that. He says, I'd rather step on your toes before I stand on your grave. I'm going to tell you the truth. You've been lying all your life, David, and people have been lying back. It's about time you heard the truth. And he told me the truth of the matter is this, you guys. This is a program for the people who want it. Needing this thing means absolutely nothing. When we're talking about our program of recovery, needing this thing means absolutely nothing. 12 years in and out, in and out, in and out. I needed what you people had. But God knows I need. I'm burning my life to the ground twice over. I'm destroying everything good in my life. Every relationship that meant anything to me whatsoever is being totally desecrated by my drinking. And I don't know what to do about it. I'm destroying everything good in my life, and I do not know what to do. You know? And I'm lost. I'm just lost, you know. But the last 8.5 years, it's been different. With that sponsor, this guy told me it is a program for the people who want it. I needed what you people had, but needing what you have means nothing. Despite the fact that everything good in my life is disappearing in front of my face, needing this solution, needing your program of recovery, needing that connection that you guys gave me with the God of my understanding was nowhere in the picture during those 12 years. This guy told me the truth. He said, David, this is a program for the people who want it. I heard a guy in Boston say it one time, guys, and he made it real simple. He said, hey, guys, if you don't want what we got, don't worry. You ain't going to get it. You know what I mean? Sit back, relax, have a cup of coffee, we'll hang. You know what I mean? The only requirement for membership here is a desire to stop drinking. Anytime you got that, you're a member in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome aboard. This thing we call recovery, this program of recovery, that's optional. We don't require recovery here. Not for membership anyway. You know what I mean? You know, but I thought that's what it was about. This guy told me the truth. He told me, no. It's a program for the people who want it. I thought I was going to get it, what, just by sitting beside you. You got the glow. You got the going. You got it going. I can tell. You are happy. You are joyous. You have been set free. I want what you have. I'll sit next to you. Like it's going to work. Rub off on me or something. You know what I mean? I didn't get drunk watching the guy next to me drink. You know what I mean? I'm not going to find my recovery watching the guy next to me take action. Watching it work for all you. Why were you doing it? I want it too, but I'm not willing to get out of my seat. I'm not willing to take any action whatsoever to get what you people got. And what am I getting? Resentful. What am I getting? Angry. What am I getting? I'm walking out the door. I'm out the back door, you know? And it wasn't like there wasn't hope coming my way. You were sharing a message of hope. I just wasn't hearing it, you know? And this sponsor of mine told me the truth. He said, David, if you want this thing, you got to get off your feet and you got to start taking some action. What we got is a program of action, you know? He also told me something else. He picked up this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and he told me every answer I needed was in here. He turned to page 44 and he said, David, we suffer from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. You see, guys, for the longest time I came in here missing this illness thing. I didn't think I had an illness. I had a drinking problem. That's not an illness. I had a drink. I drink a lot. I drink a little bit too much. I drink every now and then when I shouldn't, maybe. I don't know, you know? But I don't see it as an illness. I'm just a guy who likes to party. I work out. I play hard. Rah, rah, rah. You know what I mean? I don't see this as an illness. I'm just a guy who likes to drink every day, you know? I don't see it as an illness. But this is an illness. We have an illness. Now, what kind of illness is this? Only a spiritual experience? Only a spiritual experience will conquer this thing. What kind of illness is this? I like the kind of illness where you give me a couple of pills and the next morning I feel fine. You know what I mean? I love those kind of illnesses. Real simple. Let's keep it simple. You want to keep it simple? Give me a pill. If there was a spirituality pill out there, guys, I'd take it. You know what I mean? Hell, I'd take two. I know how I get, you know? Seriously. I wish we had this. Why can't this be the kind of illness where, you know, you check into the hospital, a surgeon comes in, they knock you out, they cut this thing called alcoholism out of you, and they check you out 4 days later. That's the kind of illness that I want. Seriously, I had my gallbladder out 7 years ago. I haven't thought about it since. I don't hang out with other gallbladder sufferers. I don't have gallbladderism, you know. I don't attend meetings of Gallbladders Anonymous. I am done with it. They cut it out. I don't think about it anymore. It's over with. I'm done. That's the kind of illness I like. No, not here. I have an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So I guess I got to get me one of them. I don't need a surgeon. I need a spiritual experience. I don't need a doctor. I don't need medication. I don't need a psychiatrist. I need a spiritual experience. And I got to find me one of them. And I have no idea what one is. I have no idea what one means. And I have no idea how to get one. But I got to find one. That's what that book says. Guys, we do not suffer from an illness which is conquered by knowledge. Understand that. I was so misled in the beginning. Not by you, by me. I came in here trying to figure this out all by myself. Thank God I finally figured out there's nothing to figure out. It's all been figured out for us. We suffer from illness. This is not an illness which is conquered by knowledge. This is an illness which is conquered by action. Action. Action and more action. And that's it. And we suffer from an illness which this book tells me is we suffer from an illness which is conquered by only a spiritual experience will conquer. So I'm wasting my time like I did for 12 years, guys, in and out, in and out, in and out, bringing my alcoholism to Mass General Hospital. I brought it to Mass General. I brought it to the psychiatrist. I brought it to the psychologist. I brought it to the group therapies. I brought it there. I brought it there for 12 years running, you know? So those doctors cannot help me with my alcoholism. God put them on this earth for a lot of wonderful reasons, and they help us with a lot of problems that we might have. It's just it's not our alcoholism fits there. Bringing my alcoholism to a psychiatrist is like bringing a jellyfish to an orthopedic surgeon, you know? There ain't no bones in there for him to work with, so what's the sense? You know? The psychiatrist can't help us. I'm not going to get a spiritual experience in Mass General. I'll get a psychiatric experience there. I'll get a psychological experience there. Hey, and with any luck, I'll get a pharmaceutical one with a script or two written on the way out the door. You know how that goes, don't you? Yeah, you know. Anything to make me happy, you know? But I'm not going to find a spiritual experience there. I learned that. You know what else the sponsor told me? This time around, he pointed it out. He told me, you only got two choices, Dave. You see, Dave, you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. You're the real alcoholic. You're the hole-in-the-soul alcoholic. And if you are that, you only have two choices. Believe me, guys, I looked for a third. For 12 years, I sought out a third alternative. I looked for an easier, softer way. The two choices that you were giving me in this book, in this program, I did not like. You know, it's like I'm in a game show. Dave, behind door number one, a life based upon spiritual principles. Behind door number two, doomed to an alcoholic death. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? Which one do I pick? I'm like, help me. Hey, can I phone a friend, someone out there, help me with this? You know what I mean? We don't know where to go with it. We don't know what to do with it. You're like me, and you know what I'm talking about. Spiritual principles? Are you kidding me? What are you telling me? I got to chase God? What are you talking about? That's going to be the answer here? You know? I'm asking myself, well, just how bad is an alcoholic death? You know what I mean? That's me wrestling with that for 12 years. You know what I mean? Settling for that for 12 years. That's what I did. You know? This sponsor told me the truth. He told me our job here in Alcoholics Anonymous was real simple. He said he taught me something I never understood for 12 years. AA is nothing but the message delivery business. That's all we're in here. It's that simple. We're in the making it available business. We're in the showing up business. We're in the carrying the message business. We're paper boys and paper girls for God, and that's all we are. He writes it, we deliver it. That's it. We just show up. He says, and remember, Dave, you're not in the results business. You're not in the outcome business. Quit keeping score. Quit counting. If you think you're out there to count, you're in the wrong business. You know? He made that real clear. You know, and he said, my recovery will not depend upon the success of the people I try to help. My recovery is going to depend upon just trying to help them, showing up. This morning I got on my knees. I said, God, what do you want me to do today? He said, I want you to go over to Easton and join that outing and share my message of hope. And I said, well, what do you want me to tell them when I get there? He says, I'll tell you when you get there. Just show up. Just show up. If I tell you now, you'll mess it all up. But by the time you get there, it'll be all about you again. You know what I mean? Just hold on, you know? Walk away, say a prayer before you go up, and then I'll take it from there. You know what I mean? I rely on him for carrying the message. All we do is show up. It reminds me of a guy back in Boston who said it one time. He goes, I've been sober 20 years, and in my 20 years of sobriety, I've sponsored over 200 men. Over 200 men with 100% success rate. I'm there with 200 men, 100% success rate? You got to be kidding me. All my guys are drinking. How you doing that? He says, don't get me wrong. A lot of my guys are drinking. Matter of fact, some of them are dead. But I've been happily, joyfully sober for these 20 years. And I call that 100% success. That's it. Showing up, carrying the message. I don't know who's supposed to hear this here thing here this morning. I don't know who's supposed to hear this message. That's none of my business. It's not my job to know. And I'm not here to sell you a thing. My sponsor didn't sell me a thing that day. We're not here to sell you a thing. If you're not done, go get done. I'm not being rude. We love you here. Welcome. Stay. Hang. Believe me, we're not saying otherwise. But if you're not done, go get done. Why? Because this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, our program of recovery, it works a hell of a lot better when you're done. Thank you. It works a hell of a lot better when you're done. You know what I mean? It was that way in the beginning. In 1935, they used to hear no cards. They used to say, if you want a drink, that's your affair. But if you want a solution, if you want to quit for good and for all, Dr. Bob, quote unquote, not one day at a time, if you want to quit for good and for all, he promised us we have a solution that works. And my sponsor pointed that out to me. You know, I look at those 12 years when I was in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. What was I doing then? What do I got to switch up this time around to make it a little different? Here's one thing that comes to mind. I came in here in 1989. I was 29 years old. On the outside, here's what it looked like. I'm practicing law up on the North Shore of Boston. I'm doing pretty good, you know. I'm wearing nice suits. I'm driving nice cars. I'm living in nice apartments, you know. I'm fairly successful in what I'm doing out there. I'm doing pretty good in the courtroom. And if you met me in a bar, guys, you would have heard all about it within the first 3 minutes. You know, I would have gotten that right out at you. You know, got to impress you know. You know, but what you also would have seen back then had I shown you, or if I even knew it existed, to be quite honest, you would have seen a hole in the soul this big that all the drink and all the drug in the world just didn't seem to fill. I couldn't fill the hole. I just couldn't fill the hole. The cars weren't filling it. The suits weren't filling it. The trinkets and the toys and the apartments weren't filling it. The courtroom successes weren't filling it. Nothing was seeming to filling it. Every relationship I had wasn't filling it. I couldn't fill the hole. You know? And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous at 29 years old, 89, back in 1989. You know, simply and solely to save my job. And I walk in here thinking I know more about this deal than all you people combined. Why? Because I'm smarter than all you. That kind of arrogance, that kind of ignorance, I don't brag about that today, guys. Trust me. That kind of ignorance almost killed me. You know? It almost killed me. You know? I finally figured out there's nothing to figure out. It's all been figured out for us. But I came in here thinking I knew more than you guys, so I don't need your direction, I don't need your guidance, I don't need your support, I don't need your help, I don't need your sponsorship, thanks very much. I'm all set on that too, thank you. Oh, and your big book? Two big thanks. I wasn't reading it. Well, seriously, look at this thing, you know, what are we going to do with that, you know? I thought it was a novel. Light reading for the alcoholic. I had no idea what you were doing with the thing. All I know is I wasn't picking it up. You know, thank God this time around I had a guy say to me, You know, he pulls you aside after a meeting, after I'm sure I was, you know, spouting out all these wonderful things I had to say in the meeting, knowing absolutely nothing about what I'm talking about. And he says to me, David, let me ask you something, dude. Do you have a sponsor? I said, well, no, not really. He goes, what do you know about this thing? He goes, I got to be honest with you, Dave. I never met anyone too dumb for this program. But my God, we bury butt heads like you all the time. Yeah, guys too smart for their own good. Guys that come in here thinking they know it all. Guys that come in here with too much pride, too much ego, and too much arrogance like I had. To let someone who maybe knows a little bit more about this deal than I do show us how to do it. That was me. I never gonna let you show me a thing. I'm gonna suffer through this. I'm gonna figure it out on my own. And here's a second mistake I made. Maybe you can relate. I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. And for the sake of this conversation, let's just get it straight. I'm talking about the drink, the drug, and all the things like it. Because the drink and the drug and all the things like it follows drink for me. But it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just gonna call it the drink for the sake of this conversation, but that's what I'm talking about. I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. Sure I did. And why wouldn't I? Everyone in my life is telling me I got a drinking problem. I got my parents telling me I got a drinking problem. My brothers and sisters are telling me I got a drinking problem. My best friends in my life, who by the way are no longer in my life today, were telling me back then I had a drinking problem. My co-workers, my bosses, my clients are telling me I got a drinking problem, you know? It's getting bad out there, you know? I got a drinking problem. So what did I do? Yeah, I'm a genius, aren't I? I walk in here, I said, okay, fine. If I got a drinking problem, then all I got to do is just take the drink out of the equation, problem solved. That's what I thought. Just stop drinking. My sponsor this time around says to me, you got a drinking problem? Quit drinking. Quit drinking. And David, if after you quit drinking, you find you still have a problem, well, maybe drinking wasn't the problem to begin with, Dave. Maybe you are the problem. He was right. Now I get it. I wasn't a problem drinker. Guys, I was an answer drinker. Life was the problem. Drinking was the answer. The drinking solved my problem. The drink solves the problem. It does for me. And what drinking was doing to my non-alcoholic friends, it was doing to me, it was getting us drunk. But what the drink was doing for me, it wasn't doing for them. It was setting me free. There was something magical in that bottle. There was something, I got relief out of that bottle. The drink solved the problem, has all my life. And you guys can relate. I'm sitting in the bar, my buddy comes in, he's all bummed out. I go, what's the matter with you? He goes, oh, I just lost my job. What's the first thing I ought to do? Oh, let me buy you a drink. Sure. Six straight slaves, like, yeah, who needs a job? I don't need to work. Problem solved. Not a problem anymore. You know what I mean? You come in the bar, somebody comes walking in, what's the matter? He goes, she left me. Oh my God. Let me buy you a drink. You know? Six drinks later, like, ah, screw the bitch, who needs her? Ah, you know? Drink solves the problem yet again, you know? And the problem, and that's a great solution. It's absolutely, what a wonderful solution. And if there was an endless supply of booze out there and no consequences following it, I wouldn't be here today. I would. I put this microphone down. I gotta go. You know what I mean? I don't need you. I don't need your solution. I don't need your plan. I don't need your program. I don't need God. I just need a drink. You know what I mean? Because all my problems will get solved. Unfortunately, it does come to an end. There's never enough. There's just never enough. You know? There's just never enough for me. So, and you know, in the drink, my solution, you know, when you take my drink away, you did not just solve my problem. When you take my drink away, that's when my problem really just begins. And I didn't know that. So no wonder I'm here for a week or a month or a year or 3 years miserable. You took away my solution. You didn't solve my problem. I don't know what to do. In a world that would otherwise terrify me, I'm walking smooth with a drink in my hand. You just took it away. What the hell am I supposed to do out there now? This is where my problem's really just beginning. You know, and I don't understand that. And I didn't cross some magical line somewhere along the way, guys, and figured this out. It wasn't like somewhere well into my drinking I realized, my God, this is magical. I'm talking about that. That's my experience in the first night. Let me take you back to 13 years old, 1973, Patchy Woods in Reading. What a monumental night that is. What do you think? All these years later, 2010, I'm still talking about one Friday night in the Patchy Woods in Reading in 1973. Of course it must have been a monumental night. What a life-changing event. 13 years old. I just wanted to fit in. I wanted to hang out. I wanted to be part of. My friends are gone. They're all stealing booze from their father's liquor cabin, so am I. I drank out of a pickle jar that night. You know? I have not. God knows what was in it, but I filled it with everything I could. You know what I mean? And there I am, joining my friends, bottle in hand. You know? Now, I had all the pains, pressures, problems. I had all the fears, doubts, insecurities any other kid had had. I think I might have had a few others tossed my way, to be quite honest. I was the goofiest looking kid you ever saw. You know? The triple lens glasses, the big nose, the buck teeth, 6'1" by the age of like 7, you know what I mean? Every class had one. It was me, you know what I mean? That was me. You know? But my God, that night in the woods, the magic happened. The magic happened. That night in the woods, it all changed. That night in the woods, give me 15 minutes with that pickle jar out of my mouth. And my world changed. It changed forever. You know? And the glasses didn't fall off. The nose didn't shrink. The teeth didn't straighten. You know? I didn't lose 3 inches. What happened was simply this. The fear went away. I wasn't afraid. The booze took the fear away. I liked you guys better when I was drinking. I liked the world around me better when I was drinking. I saw it different when I was drinking. It felt better. Guys, I liked myself better when I was drinking. And I figured it out that night. And I made a decision that night, and I didn't even know I was making it, but I made a decision that night. 13 years old, Patchy Woods in Reading, before a junior high school dance. I made a decision that night that was going to change and affect my life for the rest of my life. I made a decision to make that drink the most important thing in my life. And to keep it the most important thing in my life, I'm going to pay a lot of prices. Well, I'm going to pay prices. My seat in Alcoholics Anonymous did not come free. I paid for that seat. I came here with heartache. I came here with loss. I came here with misery. I came here with destruction. I came here with sheer desecration. I came here with my life burnt to the ground twice over and everything we lose in the fire. I came in here broken. I paid for my seat. I paid for it with quite a price. You know, and I didn't know it. I didn't sign up for that. I'm just the guy who likes to party. I can't understand how and why this is happening, but it is. I'm just the guy who likes to have a couple of beers. I might like to have a little drink. I just like to get a little buzz. You know, how is that happening? I heard it explained one time back in Boston. I say it the same time every time I speak. 21 years old, I walk into a package store downtown Boston. Like that 12-pack of Budweiser, please. The guy pops it down in front of me, looks at me, and he goes, "That'll cost you $14.95 in every real friendship you've ever had." Sounds about right. I'll pay that. You know? Sure, 31 years old, you walk into a bar, short in a beer, please. The bartender puts it down in front of you. Says, "That'll cost you $8. In your marriage." Oh my God, sounds about right. I'll pay that. Me, I'm 41 years old. I walked into a package store, Boston, Massachusetts. "I'd like that 50 tequila, please. The Cuervo holds the one with the worm in it." "Yes, sirree." That one right there. Pops it down in front of me. Guy says to me, "That'll cost you $17.95 and your license to practice law in the Commonwealth." I reached into my wallet and I paid it. Hell yeah. No doubt about it. No question in my mind at the time. I paid it. So did you. You know exactly what I'm talking about. What price did you pay for your seat? It didn't come free, I guarantee you. I know it didn't. You know? Anyway, that's the way it would go for me. That's the way I drank. From the start. The drink set me free. It was my solution. It gave me magic. But magic in my life I never knew existed. You know? and so forth. Get through high school, I go through college, 4 years, blackout, I don't even know. You know, eat, sleep, drink, and study. That's 4 years of my life, though. I wish I remembered them to any great extent, but they were great. And I do them again, oh, I guarantee I do those 4 years over again. Probably the same way. You know, I graduate 4 years later with a degree in economics and a cocaine addiction, and off to law school I go. You know, I go 3 years of law school, get out of school, now I'm working out in the working world. I'm working hard, I'm playing hard. The drink is still plastered in my hand. Nothing like that is changing. I know no other way of life, you know. But now the problem is the drink is catching up. I'm 28, I'm 29 years old, and the drink is catching up to me. You know, I'm no longer staying a step or two ahead like I was during the school years. Now the drink is starting to take its control. Now the drink is taking this. Now the drink is now giving me my orders. I'm getting my marching orders from a bottle. I no longer have the power of choice. That's long gone. The drink is telling me who I'm doing, what I'm doing it with, where I'm doing it, how it's going down. The drink is telling me when I'm starting. The drink is telling me when I'm stopping. You know, because when I start drinking today, there is no tomorrow. Instant shift to priorities. You know, in the beginning, I look at it this way. If drinking was something I was doing once in a while, sprinkled around my lifetime, by the age of 29, life was something I was doing once in a while, sprinkled around my drinking. My friends couldn't depend on me. They were gone. Work was becoming a joke. My family, they didn't know what to do with me. You know, the drink was in control. So it was no surprise by the age of 29. It's a typical Tuesday night, you guys. It's a typical Tuesday night back then. I'm going to go out, but I'm going to be home by 11. I got to be home by 11 tonight. I got a big trial tomorrow, and I know it. I'm not drinking to escape reality. I know my reality. I'm just going to go and have a couple of drinks, and I'm convinced that's okay. I'm convinced that when I say I'll be home by 11, I'll be home by 11. But what happens is 11 o'clock comes and goes. My friends are getting up from the bar, and they're leaving. I'm like, where are you guys going? It's only 11, you know? And I'm not leaving. Why am I leaving and they are? They're leaving because they can. They don't suffer from the allergy I got going. I didn't know it then. They don't suffer from this allergy to alcohol that we have. They don't suffer from a mental obsession that drives them to the bar no matter what. And then this phenomenon of craving that glues me to my bar stool. I can't get up. I cannot, with all the power I can muster from a human sense, get out of my seat and walk out of that bar. They can. They're not alcoholic. Thank you, Dr. Silkworth. Now I understand many things for which I cannot otherwise account. So, of course, it's 2 in the morning. Lights are flashing. Why is every bar I've ever been in, the lights have to be flashing before I'm leaving? You know? Why is every bar I've ever been in, the bartender has to be telling me, Dave, you got to go. You know what I mean? Why is it if you have me over your house on a Friday, there's something to drink, I'm still there Sunday? Sorry. You know? What I mean? I was that guy, you know what I mean? The one on the couch that just wasn't leaving, you know? That was me, you know? I know today why. I understand why. And 2 o'clock comes and goes, it ain't over. You know it ain't over. 10 of you, back to my place, willingly, you know? We're doing all those things we do to stay up all night, easy enough. 8 o'clock in the morning rolls around again. I'm getting up from my dining room table, I'm taking a shower, I'm putting a suit on, and I'm trying to drive to court. I'm trying to drive to the office. I'm trying to drive to work. I'm trying to drive to the courthouse to represent you in that OUI. Sorry. I owe a lot of clients a lot of amends. Let's put it that way. You know? That's what it was coming down to. So at the age of 29, my boss has said real simple, David, either you get out or you get sober. One of the two. We're not keeping you. You're a disgrace. So to save my job, I jumped on a plane and I flew to all places. Effort of Pennsylvania, wherever that is, somewhere out here. Looks like this, you know. Can't be far away. I don't know. Amish farmlands, beautiful place. It was ARC, the terraces. Back in 89, it was a huge resort. It was a 28-day rehab. And that's what it was. It was a resort. It was a hotel. It was built into a mountain. It was gorgeous. Built-in pool. I loved it. I said, wow, this is all for me. You know what I mean? And I had a lot of God-inspired men and God-inspired women carrying me a message of hope and a message of recovery, a message of love, a message of unconditional love and service, a message of God. It was put right in front of me. It was handed to me. It was laid at my feet. And I wasn't hearing a thing. Why? Because you cannot say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message, guys. It's just a principle. You can't say the right thing. But thank God, by the same token, please remember too, you can't say the wrong thing to someone who is. You can't say the wrong thing to someone who is ready to hear our message. When the God in you touches the God in me, and the magic we call recovery happens when one alcoholic reaches out to another alcoholic for the sole purpose of recovery, you cannot say the wrong thing. But I didn't want what you had. If the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, well, that's a wonderful thing. Except I didn't have one of them. I had three bosses who had a desire I stopped drinking. Hell, they flew me out, you know what I mean? I didn't have one of them, though. So I saw it as a vacation. I spent 28 days there. The best memory I got of that place was we did arts and crafts. How about that? How about that 20 years later? How's that for money well spent, you know? We did. I remember I was in a room probably like this. But I was sat in a table like this, like 18 of us up and down the thing. Up 18 men up and down the East Coast sitting at this table. I get a moment of clarity. It's like, oh my God, I look up. I go, you guys, what is wrong with this picture? I'm a 29-year-old attorney from Boston sitting in the middle of Effort of Pennsylvania on a Wednesday morning at 10:30 doing spin art. Someone shoot me. What happened? You know, it was good once. What happened? You know what I mean? Like, could you please pass the purple? It's like, you know, I was dying, you know. Anyway, that's my memory of rehab in 1989. So 30 days later, 15 pounds heavier, some nice artwork under my arm, you know. Now I'm back in Boston. And what am I doing there? I'm shouting from the hills, recovery, recovery, I'm in recovery. Like I know what it is, you know what I mean? Like I have any clue what the word even means, you know. But I'm in it. I'm in recovery. You see, I think that just because I'm not drinking on any given day, I think that just because I'm suffering through another day sober, I'm in recovery. Let me get it straight for you guys. When I'm not drinking, that's all I'm doing, I'm sober. Wonderful. Good. Good for me. You see, because the solution to my drunkenness is sobriety. No doubt about it. The solution to my alcoholism is recovery. And there's two separate things. They are two separate things. I think just because I'm not drinking, I'm in recovery. That's not always true. You know? I don't know what I'm doing. I have no clue what I'm doing. Remember, I'm not looking for direction. I'm not looking for help. I'm not opening the book. There's no steps in my life. There's no solution in my life. I'm just not drinking. So here I am just bouncing around Alcoholics Anonymous like a pinball. Don't know what I'm doing. God knows what I was saying back then. It was a mess. You know what I mean? I'm talking to you bumper stickers. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, Dave, you want to go for coffee? Whoa, easy does it. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to. No idea what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Not once. You know? 12 years, in and out, in and out, in and out. Not one person came to me for sponsorship. Do you believe that? Not one person asked me to be their sponsor for those 12 years. What's that about? I know now. No one wanted what I had. I didn't want what I had, you know. But I'm going to give it to you, you know. No doubt no one came to me for sponsorship. Hell, you know. So that would start that 12-year run, in and out, in and out, in and out. Best I had, 3 years. I stayed sober for 3 years. I told you what it was like. It was miserable. It's just untreated sobriety, untreated alcoholism. That's all I was suffering from. You know, a bad case of sobriety. That's all I had going on. Do nothing to change the man I brought in. You know, let me fast forward for a second, you know. I'm making your church basements every night. I'm coming to your meetings. There's no doubt. I'm a meeting maker. But I'm not getting the miracle. None of that's happening. I'm not taking any action. I think coming to your meetings is the action I'm supposed to be taking. And I am looking around saying, oh my God, please, if this is all I got to look forward to, you can shoot me now. I'm not going to make it. You know, this time around, fast forward November 2001. Let me fast forward for a second. It's November 2001. I'm two weeks sober. I'm at a place on Cape Cod. I'm in a facility called the Miller House down in Falmouth on Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And it's my first day there. And a counselor's aide by the name of Joe. I'm out back having a smoke. And this guy came out, had a cigarette with me. Here's a classic example of God using us with or without our permission. God does not need our permission to use any one of us anytime he wants. You know? Willing or unwilling, conscious or unconscious, instruments of a power greater than ourselves. He used Joe that day. I don't know if Joe knew it. Joe talked to me that day and he said something. And if Joe was standing here beside you right now and I said, hey, Joe, do you remember that day you were standing with me outside the Miller House and you said that to the guy? In all likelihood, guys, he'll probably tell you, you know, Dave, I don't remember that. 8.5 years later, guys, I'm still talking about it. talk about God using him that day. You know what he said? He said, David, if all you're doing here is just not drinking, if all you're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for is just learn how to not to drink for one day at a time, and all you think is all we have to offer is one day of sobriety, that's all we have to offer here. And he says, and you're taking no action whatsoever to change the man you brought in here. You're doing nothing to change the person you brought in here. You're doing nothing to move those feet that you're walking on in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're taking no action here whatsoever to change the man you brought in. He said, it's just a matter of time, Dave. He said, how long can you hold your breath? How long can you hold your breath, Dave, before you're going to pick a drink back up again? How long are you going to be able to stand that ugly, miserable sobriety before you're going to pick a drink back up again? How long, Dave? How long are you going to suffer in sobriety before you're going to look for relief in a bottle? You'll look for relief. You'll need relief. You'll only be able to stand it so long. You can only hold your breath so long before you're going to go right back to where you started. And you will go back there. You've proven it time and time and time again. 12 years in and out, in and out, in and out. What makes you think anything's going to be different? Here you stand at the turning point. Here you've got to realize your half measures availed you nothing. When are you going to start making a difference in your life? And that guy was right. I look back at the 90s. During those 3 years, best I got, held my breath. 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I took no action whatsoever. I was doing nothing to change the man I brought in here. Nothing else was changing my life. I was suffering in sobriety. I was holding my breath in sobriety, and I could hold it no more. And at the end of 3 years, what did I do? I did what anyone else in this room, anyone in this room who's relapsed knows what I'm talking about. Because you did what I did. I don't care if you were sober for a week, a month, a year, or a decade. If you relapsed after that period of time, you did what I did after 3 years. You made a sober decision, like I made a sober decision, to pick that drink back up again. Holding that drink in my hand after 3 years, holding that drink in your hand after that week, that month, that year, or that decade, holding that drink in our hands on those days, the drink was not our problem. How the hell was the drink my problem that day? I hadn't had one for 3 years. The drink was not my problem that day. Holding that drink in my hand that day, the drink was not my problem. What my problem was that day was my sobriety. My ugly, miserable, restless, irritable, discontented, I can't stand it for another second sobriety. That was my problem. My ugly, miserable, untreated sobriety and my inability to live comfortably in it. I was solving the wrong problem. You guys, you want to know the leading cause of relapse today? Sobriety. It is. Think about it. Every time you've relapsed, it's because you can't stand your sobriety. You suffer from a bad case of sobriety. A bad case of untreated, I can't stand it for another second sobriety. You know, powerless, I was only going out for the weekend. I'll be back Monday. I said it. I'm coming back Monday. Just give me one Saturday night. Just give me one Saturday. Just one blackout. That's all I want. Tell me about it Sunday. I'll be back Monday. You know what I mean? That's the way I was looking at it. You know, and that weekend lasted 9 years. And during those 9 years, I will burn my life to the ground. I will lose everything good in my life twice over. Waking up yet again, maybe. Maybe if I'm lucky in a rehab, detox, nut house, asking myself what happened, and then building back up from scratch. My God, I'm tired of building it up from scratch. Tired. I don't want to do that again. My message here, guys, is you never have to do that again. We get a solution that will let you never have to have that. Quit? I know how to quit. I know how to quit drinking. I've done it 1,000 times. Can you show me how to stay quit? Can you show me how to not start again, please? That's really what I got to know. Can you show me how to stay quit and stay comfortable doing it? Can you show me how to stay quit and not be restless, irritable, and discontented? Can you show me how to stay quit and not feel restless, irritable, and discontent and suffering? Can you show me that? That's what I really got to learn. This book tells me, it gives me directions. My sponsor says, follow them. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. It's November 2001. It's the end for me. I don't even know it. I'm a walking shell of the man I used to be. I'm thrown out of another law firm. Unemployed and unemployable again. A six-figure income gone overnight. You know, I'm trying to put a law practice together by day while I'm walking the streets of Boston at night doing whatever comes next to get the drink or the drug. You know, every real friend in my life, gone. You know, I got parents on a daily basis, my mother and my father, with tears in their eyes on a daily basis, put there by my actions, which I'm powerless over stopping. Check it out, guys. My mother and father are not alcoholic, but my God, they suffered from alcoholism. Mine. They suffered. You know, at that point in time, my brothers and sisters, wonderful people, they're scared of me. They don't want me in their house. They don't want me near their children. Every real friend in my life is long, long, long since gone. You know, I'm living, one might say, to drink. You know, I can't get out of bed unless there's a pipe or a bottle waiting for me. I can't move. I'm immobile. I'm paralyzed. My life is paralyzed. I mean, there's not a drink waiting for me. I can't get up. Every bit of potential, ambition, and drive that I once had in my life are long since gone, you know. I honor and dignity are lost in the dust of my addiction. Honor and values warped beyond any sense of recognition. I don't even know who I am anymore, you know. Hope is gone. My wallet's empty. My bottle's empty. My pipe is empty. My life is empty. And I don't know what to do. When I live like that, I got to drink like that. When I drink like that, I got to live like that. And I don't know how to. I know the drink is destroying everything good. I know it. I know it. But guys, I can't put it down. Whatever relief I'm getting, however short-lived it is, I'm paying the price. I keep paying it. I need that relief. However short-lived it is. And it is getting shorter and shorter-lived, but I'm paying the price. My last night out there was Wednesday, November 14, 2001, a night like any other for me. I walked into a bar up in Lowell, Massachusetts. I closed that bar like I've closed every bar I've ever been in, you know. And at 2 in the morning with the lights flashing and the bartender saying, David, you got to go. I kicked back the last sip of an empty glass. I put that glass in the bar and I walked out the door, having no idea that that would be my last drink to date. I had no idea. Believe me, guys, had I known that would have been my last drink, I would have ordered two. One for the road, you know? And you would have too. Make it a tall, you know? I didn't know. From that moment to this, I've been living a plan not my own. From that moment to this, I have been living a plan that I did not design. I have not planned this path. I did not chart this course. I have not designed this destiny I've lived for the last 8.5 years. This has not been my doing. I have been living according to a power greater than myself, whether I wanted to or not, willing or unwilling, conscious or unconscious. I became an instrument of a power greater than myself. That'll give you an idea of what I was like. I was going to get up the next morning, wake up, and just do it all over again. But God had another plan. On the morning of Thursday, November 15, 2001, I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to a knock on the door unlike any other knock I've ever heard in my entire life. And on the other side of the door stood the FBI, the DEA, two state and two local, looking for me. And the run was over. It was over. Next thing you know, I'm standing in front of a United States Federal District Court judge. The United States Federal District Court. Wonderful. The United States of America versus David W. Perry. Now, there's the caption of a lifetime, huh? The one I've been waiting for my whole legal career just happened, you know? Tell me about that. And what happened was I was one of 38 guys arrested from Miami to Boston that morning. One of 38 guys stretching from Miami to Boston. 17 of us from Boston. And I'm standing in front of the federal district court judge, and she's telling us it's charges, conspiracy to possess and distribute 500 kilograms of cocaine. 500 kilograms. I buy 8 balls. Kilograms. It's like, you got to be shitting me. They're like, can I see one? I never know what you're talking about, you know what I mean? But there I stand, you know, 17 of us in Boston lined up in front of this federal district court judge. 8 Colombians to my left, 8 Colombians to my right, and there's Dave Perry in the middle, like, it's what happened, you know? If you were standing beside me that morning, I would have told you without 1 ounce of reservation, this is the undisputed worst day of my life. This is really bad. This is wicked, wicked bad. I'm telling you. You know, I'm here to let you know today I don't look at it that way. As a matter of fact, I drove out here to Eastern Pennsylvania this beautiful Saturday morning to let you know I do not look at it that way. I don't see it that way anymore. As a matter of fact, I look at that as probably the single greatest event that's ever happened to me in my entire life. And I'm also here to tell you without 1 ounce of reservation and with every cell in my body, I believe I'm here for one reason only. God sent those men. God sent them. Well, He brought them there. He sent them to get me. He had a job for me to do. He has a plan with my name on it. He wasn't catching my attention along the way. He caught it that morning. You know? My sponsor talks about direct hits. The near misses, whoa, I keep going. You know what I mean? The near misses, they don't slow us down at all. The direct hits, well, that's different. God sent me a direct hit. He's got a plan with every one of our names on it. It's just when we're going to be willing and what's going to happen in our lives till we finally become willing to step aside and put our little plans and designs on the back burner and let His plan and design take over. Well, that's what the morning happened for me. You know? And the judge is telling us, no bail. The judge is telling us the charges carry 10 to life. And the next thing you know, my handcuffs are shackled, tied, and I'm being bound and stuffed in a van and brought down to Plymouth County Health and Correction, Plymouth County Correctional Facility, Plymouth, Massachusetts. The worst day of my life, I'll tell you when it really was. 2 days later, Saturday, November 17, 2001. 50 years to the day my parents were married, and 50 years to the day we're celebrating their wedding anniversary back in Reading. Now, the fact that I'm not at this party does not make this the worst day of my life. I've missed family events along the way. This is nothing new, you know. The reason why I'm calling this the worst day of my life is this. I'm at Plymouth County. I'm in a room probably 12 times the size of this pavilion. Spread across the thing is 80 bunk beds. I'm in one of them. It's the place they put us before they place us into our individual cells. It's called New Man. You know, and I'm sitting on that bunk bed. I'm on the top bunk where I was assigned. And from myself to the coffee pot away, I'm staring at the wall. And on that wall, you guys are the payphone. And I'm sitting on that bed and staring at that payphone. And I'm realizing for the first time in my life, even if I wanted to get up and walk across that room and pick up that receiver, I had no one left to call. I've never been more alone in my life than I was at that very, very moment and realized it. That's my bottom. That's it. I'm not letting it dip any deeper. I'm not letting it drop any lower. Slide any further. That's it. I found it. I found my bottom. You know. I had a woman one time say, you know, I don't know what prayer I said. God, what's wrong with me? That is a prayer. I had a woman one time in Baltimore at an Acts recovery. She was talking back in 2003. Over 300 people in the room that day. She was talking to me, though. You know what she said? She looked up and she said, have you found that place in your life where you have no place left to go but to God? Are you there yet? Have you guys realized that there's no power on earth, there's no human power on earth that's going to relieve us of our alcoholism? Have you gotten that one down yet? And that our real job, and the book is really quite clear, our real job here is really but one thing and one thing only. We need to find a power by which we can live, and it has to be a power greater than ourselves. It has to be a power greater than ourselves. We need to find a power. That's what we're doing here. And for whatever reason, that prayer got answered. A couple of days later, I got pulled out of that cell, brought back before the judge. I'm here but for the grace of God and the compassion of the federal government. They put me in the federal pretrial services division. The judge told me the charges are not going away. You are responsible for the charges. But in the meantime, between now and trial, a year and a half, 2 years down the road, we'll give you a chance to get recovery. And off I went. I spent the next 10 days in detox, 4.5 months in a therapeutic community, into a halfway house and onto a sober house. All the while under the care of the federal supervision. I'm under the care of the feds. For the first 8 months of my sobriety, guys, I turned my will and my life over to the care of the feds. That's the way it came down for me. Wasn't my plan. Because seriously, the only thing that was keeping me sober during those 8 months was fear. If I picked up a drink, the federal marshal's picking me up, I'm going back to prison, period. So I'm saying I'm afraid to pick up a drink. I need one. I want one. I crave one. I need it more than I've ever needed in my life. But I'm not picking up because of fear. But that's not our solution. And then on 8 months into it, 8 months of miserable sobriety, just like before, just like those 12 years, untreated alcoholism, bad case of sobriety, suffering in sobriety, sentenced to sobriety, miserable at your meetings, 8 months of that, On July 21st, 2002, another miracle in my life happened. When God put that man who became my sponsor in my life. I had an old friend who moved out of Boston back in 97. I knew him when I was 3 years sober, holding my breath. He was doing the same, but he was staying sober. And it's 8 years sober in Boston. He got sick, had to move back to Baltimore to be with his family. He needed help. And in a meeting in Glen Burnie, Maryland, he heard a man take the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that man shared a message of hope and a message of recovery. Straight up message of God. And my friend went up to that guy and said, Tom, I never heard anything like it. Will you show me what you're talking about? And my friend Steve started a journey into recovery that day, back in 1997, that I had no idea was happening. 5 years later, when he heard about the fact that I was arrested and back in treatment, he called me. He called me from Baltimore and said, Dave, check it out. My sister's got a place up in Winnipesaukee, up in Laconia, up in New Hampshire. She's vacationing for a week. I'm going to go 3 days. I got 3 days off from work. I'm going to fly up and spend some time with her. You want to go? I had no idea God was sending me my sponsor. A guy named Chuck Chamberlain back in 1973, an AA icon, he said it, seconds and inches, how our lives can churn, change in seconds and inches. What directions we go, seconds and inches. What if I said no? What if I told that guy no that day, I didn't want to go with him? What if I didn't care to see him? What if I was busy? You know? But I said, hell yeah, I'll go. Get me out of Boston. I'm miserable. I'd love to see you. I hadn't seen him in years. He gets off the plane that morning. He gets in my car. My God, within 15 minutes, I'm looking at this guy. He looks different. He sounds different. He acts different. There's something completely different. He's fresh-skinned and glowing. There's something about his eyes. He's inexplicably different. The exact experience Bill Wilson describes that happened to him at the end of that bleak November in 1934 is the exact experience that I had on July 21st, 2002, when Steve got in my car. It was amazing. Inexplicably different. We're talking in a general way. He told me what his life was like, what happened to him, what he was like now. And I knew right away I wanted what he had. I knew right away I wanted what this guy had. He gave me the greatest gift that one alcoholic can give another. He gave me the greatest gift, and he gave it to me within 15 minutes of talking. I started to feel it. Hope. 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 Hope that maybe, just maybe, my broken life could start to get back together again. Hope that maybe, just maybe, this god-awful obsession to pick up that drink of the drug that was still haunting me on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, sometimes on a minute-by-minute basis, could somehow get relieved. Hope that maybe, just maybe, the tears in my parents' eyes could finally stop, and hope that maybe, just maybe, my broken life might finally start together, and I can start losing and stop losing the things I've been losing so consistently for all these years. Hope that maybe, just maybe, he could help me do that. You know? He says, what I'm going to do, Dave, I'm going to walk you down this path. He goes, my job as a sponsor is real simple. I'm going to take your hand, I'm going to ask you to hold my hand, and I'm going to walk you down this pathway to power. It's a pathway to power. He said, trust me until I can put your hand in the hand of a power greater than yourself, and then I'm going to ask you to trust that power. That's my job as a sponsor. It's plain, it's simple. It's straightforward. It's right out of the book. I'm going to walk you down this path. I'm going to take you through these steps if this is what you want to do. He goes, well, your real problem is, David, what you really need to do, to be quite honest, I had it all wrong for so long, guys. You see, I thought I had to get my life in order before I could go out there and start helping people. Steve said, no, Dave, you got to get out there and start helping people in order to get your life in order. And you got to do it now. You see, guys, I'm one of those people who believe if you got 7 days, go find that guy with one and show him how you got seven. You got a month, go show that guy with 1 week how you got four. I'm not saying don't take them through the steps if you haven't been. Hold off on that, you know. But my God, can you share a little hope? Can you make them? Can you make us feel welcome? Can you make her feel comfortable? Can you introduce her around? Can you pick her up? Can you bring her in? That's all we got to do, you know. This guy started walking me down the steps. He goes, I'm going to take you to God, Dave. You've got a pile of problems in front of your life. I get it. What you need to do is you need to find God. I said, no, Steve. You got it all wrong. What I need to do is find an attorney. You know? I need to find a loan, a new career. I got a list of things I need to find, Steve. God's not on it, you know? He's talking about prayers and inventories. I'm looking for lawyers and loans. You know what I mean? But he told me, every problem that I had in my life, and believe me, I had a mountain of them, if I just followed him down this path, he promised me one by one by one by one by one by one by one, every one of those problems would disappear. And I'm here to report to you guys, That man did not lie to me that day. That man told me the truth. My sponsor became a prophet that day because everything he told me came true. 8.5 years later, I'm here to report one by one by one by one, every problem I had in my life since then has disappeared, and I had nothing to do with it. My sponsor said, you stay about God's business, and God will take care of yours. But that's going to take some trust. I said, I need some trust, you should be. Of course, I got real life problems here. Give me something I can see, give me something I can feel, give me something I can touch, dude. Don't talk about God. He says, David, what other options do you have? And he was right. I was out of options. That's when I stood at the turning point, guys. That's where I realized my half a measures were availing me nothing. That's when I realized what he told me. David, let go of your old ideas. Drop them. He says, when I get a new guy coming into my life, I get into the steps now. I go, why? Because it's easy to move wet cement, he says. Don't let it harden, then you need a jackhammer. You know what I mean? I had 12 years of hard cement around me. 12 years of old ideas that weren't working in my life. He said, I got to dump that bag of old ideas out, and let's start filling them with some new ones. He goes, you want to walk with me? I'll show you how this thing works. You want to come with me? Let's go. I said, well, won't you start the steps? He says, when do you want to recover? I said, now. This book is real clear, you guys. If you have decided you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, you're ready. The 100 men and women who wrote the book, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and the millions who have followed it since will all agree. There's no time limits. You do not have to wait. Don't buy into the bull, and don't let anyone tell you different. Oh, don't I have to clear up? No. No, you don't have to clear up. You need to take these steps to clear up. You do not have to wait. That is my experience, and that's what the book tells me, and that's what I did. That morning I jumped. But I told him, I said, you know, I'll be honest with you, Steve. I've been around. I've seen these steps on the wall. I don't understand how they work. I don't agree they're going to work. I don't believe they're going to work. I say, how do you do these steps if you don't understand them? How do you do these steps if you don't agree with them? How do you do these steps if you don't even believe they're going to work in your life? He said, that's just it, Dave. That's the miracle of it. You don't have to understand how they work to make them work. You have to agree they're going to work to make them work, and you don't even have to believe they're going to work to make them work. He said, all you have to do is simply become willing to follow a person who has already done them. He said, the greatest promise, page 58, rarely have we seen a person fail who has solely followed our path. He said, can you walk right behind me down a path, Dave? Is it really that hard? Can you stay 3 feet behind me? Just walk right behind me. You don't have to say what I say. You don't have to think what I think. But if you do what I do, you're going to get what I got, because this is a program of action. Your recovery is not in your head. It's in your feet. It's in your feet. My God, David, it's not about what you haven't heard. It's not about what you haven't seen. It's not about what you haven't read. It's not about what you haven't said. It's not about what you haven't studied. It's all about what you haven't done. What you haven't done. The value of action. It's repeated over and over and over and over in that book. The value of action. There's just a bunch of things to do. You don't know how to do them. I do. I've been doing them. I'll show you. Follow me. And there in that very moment, my life changed. I became willing to follow a man armed with the facts about himself, experience with the solution we call the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life changed. That was 9:30 Sunday morning, July 21st, 2002. By 3 that afternoon, he's pulling the car to the side of the road up at Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire. I'm getting out of the car and turning this book to page 63, and I'm taking the first step. There's been no prayer in my entire life that I have ever said in my entire life that's done more to change my entire life than the first step prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous. The day that I offered myself to God. The day that I met God for the first time. The day that I took on a new employer. What a powerful statement. I had no idea the impact of that. I'm here today working for my new employer, guys. I'm here at your invitation, but God sent me. I'm here because God sent me. I'm doing the job I signed up to do on my third step when I offered myself to God, when I took on a new employer, when I became an agent of God. That's all we are. We're agents for God. Agents, secret agents for God. That's all we are at Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? Isn't it crazy? At a point in my life when there was not a law firm in America that wanted me near their place, You know, I couldn't get hired by anybody. There was not a bank that would give me a credit card, a checking account, or a savings account for that matter. No credit card company wanted my name on their plastic. You know, I'm being rejected everywhere I turn because of all the problems I have in my life. And God wants me to work for Him. God wants to hire me. God wants to send me out in the world to do His bidding. Me. You see, guys, we got a gift. A powerful, powerful gift. We have the ability to touch the heart, soul, and life of another alcoholic, and God knows that. He didn't give this gift to the scientists or the scholars. He didn't give it to psychiatrists or psychologists. He didn't give this gift to the priests, rabbis, or ministers. He didn't give it to the mothers or the fathers. He gave it to the drunk. He gave it to the drunk. We're the only ones who got it. We're the only ones who can do it. My sponsor all the time, he says, what are you doing with the gift, Dave? Are you a faithful trustee of the gift? Or do you got the busies? What's got you so damn busy, Dave? You too busy to help that guy? You're chasing the money, the property, the prestige before? You had those before. They fill the hole. Besides, Dave, I saw you when you got out of detox. You didn't look too busy to me. You know, let's go. You know? He's right. The guy's right. I offered myself to God. I took on a job. I said, God, I want to work for you. I thought well before taking the step. I get out, done saying the third step prayer. I walk back. I got in the car. I looked at Steve. I said, my God, Steve, that was awesome. Let's go get some dinner. I'm starved. He says, no, Dave, let's get a notebook. He drove me to a country store, made me walk in. I bought a notebook and a pen, and I walked back out to the car, and he gave me immediate instructions on writing a fourth step. He didn't let me get anything to eat. He didn't let me stop for anything to drink. He launched me into a fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started writing immediately. I wrote about my resentments. I wrote about my fears. I put my sex conduct down on paper, and it took me 3 hours later, I was done. I was searching, I was fearless, I was thorough. I wrote about everything that came to my heart and my mind. I put it on paper. I withheld nothing. I was searching. I looked for everything. Everything that came to mind, my pen wrote. And that night I started reading my fifth step to my sponsor. 2 days later I was done. Only problem is now we're back at Logan. We're back at the airport. My sponsor's about to jump on a plane and fly back to Baltimore. I mean, you gotta be kidding me. How are you gonna sponsor me from Boston to Baltimore? How are you gonna do that? Don't you have to pick me up, give me rides, lend me money, and buy me cigarettes? How are you gonna do that from Boston to Baltimore? You know? What's up with that? He said two words. Trust God, Dave. Let's trust God. We can do this. We have phones, we have cars, we have planes, we have trains, we'll do this. He took me through the rest of the steps over the phone. I took direction from a man armed with the facts about himself and the solution we call the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I followed the directions to a T. I dotted every I, I crossed every T. And my God, 3 weeks later, it worked. A lot of guys will say, you can't do it that way. Well, color me wrong, but color me recovered. It worked. And here's what I got. I'm coming in for a close. I'm coming in for a landing, guys. I'm not going to talk all morning. Here's what I got. I got a spiritual awakening. I got one of them there spiritual awakenings you guys told me was going to conquer this illness. The only thing that would. I got it. The 12 step promised me that. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result, not a result, the result of these steps. You know? As the result. I got it. I got the spiritual awakening. A spirit that was so dead when I got here slowly started to come alive and awakened. Not by what I said, not by what I read, not by what I studied, not by what I heard, but really what I did. By the things I was doing, I was moving my feet. My mind is not my friend. It is not my friend. I know that today. My mind was telling me every reason why I was going to call you guys and cancel out on coming out here this morning, you know? But if my mind is telling me that, we're getting in the car and driving, aren't we, you know? Because I don't listen to my mind. I move my feet, you know? My sponsor told me every day is a day we have to carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. Every day is a day. I don't stay clean on yesterday's shower. I don't stay fed on yesterday's meal. I'm not staying physically fit on yesterday's workout. And I'm not staying spiritually fit on yesterday's action. If I want it today, I got to do it today. And it's just that simple. And you know what happened as a result of it, you guys? You want to know? It's just a spiritual awakening I'm talking about. Same thing as a drink. Check it out, you guys. Can you relate? I walk into a bar. I grab me up a bartender. He hooks me up with a drink. And my spirits are lifted. Wine and spirits. Right? Sure. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I grab me up a sponsor. He hooks me up with God. And my spirits are lifted. You see, guys, when I'm spiritually fit, there's nothing for a drink to fix. So I'm not looking for one. And the only way I stay spiritually fit is by taking action on a daily basis. Even if it means driving from Boston to Easton, I do it. Whatever it is I'm asked to do, there's no distance, no length to which I'm willing to go. It's not what length are you willing to go for your recovery? What length are you willing to go for his? What length are you willing to go for hers? That's the question to ask yourself. What length are you willing to go to for each other? You know? And the greatest miracle that's happened to me in these 8.5 years, you guys, is simply this. My obsession to drink and drugs, the most powerfully destructive force in my life, has been removed. The miracle is not the fact I haven't had a drink today. There's been a lot of days I haven't had a drink. I've been pretty miserable doing it. But the miracle in my life today is the fact that I haven't wanted one. The obsession's been... I'm not hanging in there today. I'm not fighting the fight today. Ain't no monkey on my back today. I'm not shooting for midnight today. The obsession's been removed. And it's been gone. Somewhere between July 21st, 2002, and here we sit, September 11th, 2010. Somewhere in this time period, somewhere in that stretch of period, somewhere one day, one morning, I woke up and I realized my obsession of drinking drug was gone. I don't know what day that was. I don't know when that moment occurred. I don't know when that minute happened. And the reason why I don't know when, why I can't tell you when it happened, why I cannot report what day that was, is simply this. I had nothing to do with it. God took it. My sponsor said, you stay about God's business, he'll take care of yours. And one day, when I wasn't looking, God took it. And it hasn't come back since. And I've been set free ever since. And when that happened, three weeks it took to go through these steps. Last 7 over the phone. When I got there, I got my sponsor. He's got me on the phone. I'm taking direction. I'm on the 12th step. He says, what are you doing today, Davey? I go, I'm going out to a meeting, Steve. He goes, okay, you ready, Dave? I'm going to give you a little direction. You ready? I want you to do something a little different tonight. I go, what do you want me to do, Steve? He goes, when you walk into that meeting tonight, I want you to do a little something different. When you walk into that meeting, instead of you walking into that meeting looking to see what you can take, because God knows you've been taking all your life, I want you to walk into that meeting looking to see what you can bring. I want you to walk into that meeting looking to see who you can help. And I want you to walk into that meeting and I want you to start talking about those steps. I want you to walk into that meeting and I want you to start talking about your recovery. I want you to start reaching your hand out to the people around you. I want you to start carrying this message. I want you to talk about what you're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to talk about the actions that I've shown you how to take. I want you to start being the paper boy that you signed up to be when you took that third step. I want you to get out there and start helping those around you, and I want you to start doing it tonight. And I said, you've got to be kidding me, Steve. I'm not ready for that. How the hell do you think I'm ready for that? I don't know it like you know it. I can't say it like you say it. You've been doing this down in Baltimore for 8 years. You know that book. I don't know that book like you know that book. I don't know these steps like you know these steps. I am not ready for that. I'm not qualified. He says, David, I know you're not qualified, and you know you're not qualified, but that new guy in the corner, he got no clue you're not qualified. Get over there and help him. You know? And the guy's right. He's got no clue. I got no clue. You know what I mean? He just sees my hand. He just sees my hand out. That's all he's got to see. Why? Because God doesn't call upon qualified men and qualified women. None of us are. I'm no more qualified than anyone in this room to carry this message. I am no more qualified than my sponsor with his 21 years of sobriety, or my great-grand sponsor with his 108 years or whatever this guy's got. I'm no more qualified than anyone in this country, in this world, to carry this message. Why? Because God doesn't look for qualified men and women to carry his message. He looks for the willing. He looks for the willing. Are you willing? Or do you get the busies? Get the busies. The message is simple. The message this morning is very simple. We get a miracle available. We get a miracle available to anyone who wants it. June 10th, 1935, the victory over alcoholism took place. When one alcoholic reaching out to another alcoholic for the sole purpose of recovery. Two strangers at a kitchen table in Akron, Ohio. A guy named Bill Wilson and a guy named Dr. Bob Smith sat down and met. One alcoholic reaching out to another. And they started a conversation that morning that's been carried on to this very day, 75 years later. Carried on right here at this very minute in this very room. In this very second as we speak, that same conversation is carried on. 4 years later, there were about 100 men and women. They got together, and they said, let's write a book. Let's put into print the actions we're taking. Let's give some people directions to follow so they can get this thing too. And they issued the book of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939. Here we are 75 years later, and the only decision that you need to make, if you haven't made it already, is whether you want to participate, whether you want to take place, whether you want to experience a miracle in your life that's happening in millions and millions of ours. If you're suffering in sobriety, and I don't care if you have a day or a decade, if you're suffering in sobriety, we're here to let you know it never has to be that way again. The victory's already happened. The miracle's available. And all you have to do is let one of us show you how to do it. Can you walk 3 feet behind us? We'll show you what to do. Our lives depend upon it. Carrying this message is not an option if you want recovery. It's an absolute requirement. Just that way it is. But if you are willing to do that, and you're willing to let us show you how to do this, we'll make it real simple. We'll take your hand and we'll take it from there. All you got to do is follow. Just come with us. Let us show you how to do it. And I guarantee, should you do that, the results will blow you away. Absolutely blow you away. Thanks for letting me be here.